Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what?
Hey, everybody. This is Harvey Sogo Wasserman back with the Green Power Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom meeting. This is number 75. Count them, 75. We have more than 60 people on the call. We are have, as always, a really packed agenda. Hetty Tripp is going to bring us back to Minnesota to talk briefly about the fantastic call we had last week with Keith Ellison. I want to remind you also, by the way, we are on the air at the Progressive Radio Network. The show airs on at Thursday at 5 o'clock. And, of course, everything is archived at the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition website, choreographed by Steve Caruso, who's our assistant engineer today, along with Mike Hirsch. My co-convener is Joel Siegel. It's grassrootsep.org or electionprotection2024.org, where the archives are stored. I did not take Joel Siegel's advice and get a haircut, so you'll have to live with my Medusa hair here for the time being. But you on the radio are, you can't see it. We don't use dirty words here unless they're in Yiddish. If you want to curse in Yiddish, you're more than welcome. Otherwise, in English, we can't do it. So keep on. I know that's a big temptation for Joel, Kenny Bruno, and others of the tribe. So you're more than welcome to talk about Lily von Strupp and whatever else you want to do. But it has to be in the Hebrew tongue. We are then going to have a long presentation from Kenny Bruno on the this fantastic article that he has posted at Truthout. We will have a deep discussion on the major issues that he has raised about the future of our democracy or the lack thereof. We are going to have a report, a brief report from Tatanka Bricka, our erstwhile stalwart on the Leonard Peltier case, and maybe we'll hear a bit more about Reality Winner, some of the other political prisoners, but we're going to go into deeper detail on future calls. We're going to have a report from Minnesota, from Wisconsin. Pete Pekarsky is going to join us along with Steve Rosenfeld. Steve put up a piece recently about the disaster in Wisconsin. And then in the second hour, we're going to have a very deep discussion from the great Julie Levine, the queen of Topanga Canyon, who is going to talk to us about 5G. It is not a happy conversation. That one is a real hair raiser, and it does lead us to question whether the human race is programmed to self-destruct. I mean, between nuclear power, fracking, Donald Trump, and 5G, I mean, what are we doing on this planet anyway? Okay, so let's proceed now. Glad to have everybody with us. It's really an honor. Joel Siegel is also going to talk to us with Ray McClendon about spreading the campaign to get the money that's going to the Democratic Party to go to grassroots campaigning. That's a big one. I made a long overdue connection with people in Texas today, and next week we're going to go really deep into the discussion about grassroots campaigning. We do have an announcement from Stacey Abrams that she will be running in Georgia, and Beto O'Rourke is running in Texas. If we have progressive candidates running for governor in these two states, we need really to be on the grassroots campaign. I don't know who's running in Florida or the other swing states, and Joel has mentioned a possible great candidate in North Carolina. I also want to mention, before I lose track, by the way, we have been, of course, had many deep discussions about gerrymandering. And in Ohio, we did win what we thought was a significant victory, putting in a procedure to limit gerrymandering in Ohio. And the Republicans completely, there is a term, RATFCKED, the situation in Ohio. And they have rigged the gerrymandering in Ohio, which was supposed to be nonpartisan, into the worst gerrymandering you could possibly imagine, where of 15 or 16 seats, the Republicans are automatically going to win virtually all of them. And this has now gone to the state Supreme Court, which has a slight Republican majority. So if there's a straight partisan vote in the Ohio Supreme Court, the gerrymandering is going to stay. And the delegation from Ohio, which is basically a 50-50 state, is going to be 90% Republican to the U.S. Congress, with enormous impacts for the long-term balance of power in the country. So that's now in front of the Ohio Supreme Court. I wanted to give you that update. Kenny Tripp, will you update us, please, in the wake of last week's great session with Keith Ellison? And then we're going to go to Kenny Bruno.
Thanks, Javi. First, I want to thank this brief Zoom gathering for a really dynamic and excellent conversation. What Keith did not share with you is that he is going to be up for election in 2022. He is ready for more with his mission as fair economy and respect dignity for everybody. This was a November 15th announcement. He has also enrolled Minnesota in national lawsuits aimed at protecting voting rights and upholding the 2020 presidential election results. I would actually like to get more information on that and give it to you. What he also didn't share on the personal side is that his mother actually died of COVID-related complications during the first year of the pandemic. So, you know, he's gone through a lot of trauma as well as doing the Derek Chauvin trial. There were questions that we had given to the Attorney General's staff, and he didn't have time to go into it in detail because we wanted his time, as you know from last week, really looking at strategy. So I thought I would share with you some of the answers I got from the Attorney General's staff. So you had asked for information on redistricting in Minnesota. She said there's no independent redistricting commission in Minnesota. However, through this Zoom call, I connected with actually somebody in St. Cloud with the League of Women Voters, and they prepared written and oral statements for our legislative districts, as well as for communities of interest on redistricting. I will be following it up with the League, and hopefully they will also come on this call. You asked about the use of Dominion voting machines in Minnesota. They are used, but we don't have any public data regarding the percentage. Minnesota voters have always cast their vote on paper ballots, but special equipment often helps to count the ballots. And all ballot tabulators are optical scan. So, and the websites I can put into the chat at a later point, but they can all be got online. There's also 4 ballot marking devices used in Minnesota: OmniBallot, ImageCast Evolution, Verity Touch Rider AutoMark. So all this information we have. Now, why I'm sharing this with you too is that I hope with GREEP, you'll be able to get the same information for every state, so we know what we're talking about when we look at voting rights. How are voter registration lists maintained, you asked. They couldn't find any specific details. But one thing that the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, did mention last week was that he supported efforts to restore the vote to former offenders. So I looked into this, and it's quite fascinating and very, I think, important. So the state constitution, that's Minnesota state, makes it clear that felony offenders are supposed to have their voting rights restored after they've been punished for their crimes. But the state also states that interprets this punishment to include probation, parole, and supervised release. Now, in Minnesota, you can get sometimes 40 years probation for some felonies. And so the ACLU has come in saying that this prolongs the denial of voting rights, violates due process and equal protection clauses of the U.S. Constitution. But Republicans of both House and Senate have consistently thwarted these efforts by reformers, saying that loss of civil rights is part of punishment. But if the legislator doesn't fix this problem, then it's the role of the courts. And that's where the AG's office and Secretary of State comes in. And the ACLU is involved in that. because Minnesota's mass incarceration system disproportionately punishes, you know, BIPOC folks. You asked, do all voters get a ballot by mail? Registered voters can elect to receive a ballot by mail, but it's not automatic. So I've been asking for it and I get it pretty well. Recounts and audits, again, there's a excellent website on the online that you can get that information, as well as what, if any, are there campaign finance restrictions? There's a whole Minnesota campaign finance board. They meet every month. And again, this is open to the public. So that very quickly, okay. Sluggo, is what I have.
Thank you. Thank you a lot. Does anybody have a question about that? We would want to follow up on ballot imaging. Do the precincts in Minnesota keep the ballot images? And I'll put you in touch with John Brakey and Ray Lutz on that. And we are really, really opposed to ballot marking devices. They are a real can of worms, and hopefully maybe we can persuade Keith and the rest of the state of Minnesota to get rid. The best ballot marking device is a pen. And that's what we would like them to do. So we should have further conversation on that.
Thank you
very, very much, Hetty. We really appreciate that report. Does anybody want to ask Hetty a question about Minnesota before we go to Kenny Bruno? We wish everybody was as thorough as you are, Hetty, in terms of following up. It's really great. Much appreciated. And of course, we want to include Minnesota in our campaign to switch the money that goes to the Democratic Party and elsewhere into the kinds of Georgia way organizing that has gone on. So that is a further conversation we'll have with you too. Okay, thank you, Hetty. We've got 70 folks on the line. We've got Kenny Bruno, my Greenpeace cohort, to present to us on his great article that's at Truth Out Now. You've got the link. Kenny, whenever you're ready, take it away.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Harvey. And first of all, full disclosure, the foundation where I'm an advisor supports Harvey and Joel and the team in doing this work. Second thing I want to say is I had a visit to the dentist today and may be talking a little funny. And the third thing is you folks on this call and a radio are witnessing a cosmic coincidence, because not only are Julie Levine and I on the same group, but we're on the same evening presenting, and she and my wife met, I think, in elementary school or the latest in junior high school.
Sixth grade.
Okay, and that was more than 5 or 10 years ago. So amazing. Harvey asked me to come on the call because I wrote an article that was published in Truth Out recently, and I want to say about it that I'm not really an election protection expert. I'm not an elections expert like a lot of you on this call. So the article was really just me stringing some things together. And I'll summarize what it says, and then we can talk about it. In the article, I kind of imagine that, you know, you want to be president and you don't care if you win or lose. You don't care how ruthless you have to be or egotistical. You just want to become the president. What would you need to do? And if you're going to lose, and you know you're going to lose the popular vote, of course, and you're probably going to lose or come very close on the electoral count. So what would you need to do to put yourself in a position to win, even if you lose? And some of those conditions are, you would want widespread belief in widespread voter and electoral election fraud. You would want radicalized state legislatures, especially in certain key states. You would want a majority of members of Congress in a majority of states. So I'll get back to that. Not just a majority in your party of the total members, but a majority of states that have mostly loyal members. You would want to purge moderates who might not go along with the ending of democracy. You would want loyalty to a single individual, preferably a cult-like allegiance. And you would definitely want a compliant Supreme Court. Those are things you kind of almost have to have to take the presidency if you lose the election. Some other things that are more like nice to haves, you would want to have roaming bands of white nationalists who are violent and intimidating. You would want them to intimidate election officials. You would want voter suppression in various guises. You don't absolutely need it, by the way, but you would certainly want it. It would help. And you would want a cynicism and confusion so deep that a lot of people don't believe in facts of any kind. It doesn't have to be the majority of the population, but a sizable minority. So if you look back, I could mention more, but if you look back at these conditions, the ones you need and the ones that are nice to have, you see that Trump and the GOP have checked most of the boxes and the rest are pretty well underway. And, you know, when I first submitted the article to Truthout, and this is a little bit of insider baseball, I called it DEFCON for Democracy. They said, well, most people don't know what that means, so they won't click on it. So they changed the title. Fine. They know what how people click better than I do. The other thing they changed in the wording was I kept saying there's a plan. This is a plan. And they kept saying, well, that's hypothetical. We don't know what their plan is. And, you know, technically, they're absolutely right. The editors were right. But usually the simplest explanation for a series of crazy things happening is the right one. And the simplest explanation for all these boxes being checked is that they have a plan and they're checking the boxes. So on the other side of the coin, what can be done about it? And is it being done? And there, you know, I just scratch my head because I think the only entity capable of stopping this plan is the Democratic Party. I don't like to say that, but I think it's true. But I don't see them doing it. But let me say, I want to mention four things that I think can be done to stop it, even if they're unlikely. And probably the people on this call will have other ideas. And I want to say about that also, I really hope I'm wrong about all this. And you people who know more about elections than I do will point out the way that I'm exaggerating the threat. I would like to be wrong about all this, but so far no one's come forward and convincingly told me I'm wrong. But anyway, I want to mention, before I get to the things that can be done to stop this big picture plan, I want to say a couple of things that I don't think will stop it. That includes great things that you guys are all fighting for, like good audits, hand-marked paper ballots, early voting, vote by mail, drop-off boxes, transparent elections. All the great things you're fighting for, honestly, I don't think are enough to stop this plan as I see it laid out. So what are the options? Well, and when I say that, I don't mean, you know, I'm not talking about controlling the narrative or fair elections. I'm talking about the actual mechanics of the election. So one thing you could do to stop this plan would be for the Democrats to have a majority of members of Congress in a majority of states, because if no one gets to 270, and I'll get to that in a minute, then it's a contingent election decided by Congress state by state. Right now, Republicans have a majority in 27 states. There are three tied, and Democrats have 20. So very unlikely that Democrats will have a majority of Congress members in 26 or more states by January 6th, 2025. That's the kind of end date for democracy under this plan. A second thing that could happen is President Biden could appoint or could nominate and the Senate confirm four new Supreme Court justices so that there potentially could be a 7-6 vote or along these sort of partisan lines when the inevitable cases came to the Supreme Court. That doesn't seem to be in the cards. But at least it would work. Another possibility was brought to my attention recently by Free Speech for People and the amendment, the 14th Amendment of Section 3, which says that if you've pledged an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and you have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against it, then you cannot run for office. So secretaries of state, they'd have to be courageous ones, could keep anybody who engaged in the January 6th insurrection off of the ballot, and that should include Donald Trump. I don't know the likelihood of that happening, but there will be some campaigning for it. And the fourth thing that is really important and probably why you see so many people working so hard for it is to pass the Freedom to Vote and the John Lewis Acts, especially if they have enough in them by the time they do come for a vote, if they come for a vote, to override the takeover provisions in states like Georgia, where the new law that was passed allows state election boards to take over county election boards. And that takeover provision is kind of like a death knell. I mean, it just could cause so much chaos that when it's time for the states to send their slates to Congress, there'll be so much chaos, so many competing slates that they won't be able to declare anyone having 270. And with the state legislatures we now have in so many swing states, that seems very likely to me. When Congress opens the envelopes, they can't determine anyone has 270, so it goes to the contingent election, and that's when they select Trump. The Freedom to Vote Act could put some serious breaks on that. But some people think that an arcane Senate procedure called the filibuster is actually more important than saving democracy, which is weird, because even if you think the filibuster is good for some reason, it's hard to argue that it's more important than having the winner of the election take the presidency. So I don't, you know, that's hard thinking for me to fathom. You know, I say DEFCON for democracy. It sounds like hyperbole. I will say this is only applies to the presidential election because of the extreme vulnerability of the Electoral College to this kind of gaming. It doesn't really apply to other elections. But if the loser takes office in 2025, then there'll be a lot of moves toward basically eviscerating the other elections that we have in this country. So I'll stop there and see if anybody would like to say that I'm wrong, and I would so love to be wrong.
Well, Kenny, thank you for that. It's a great presentation. The article is killer. And I have to say that if anything, you've understated the danger. we are looking very, very clearly, very focused at a fascist coup in this country. I will tell you that Steve Bannon, this is hard to overstate. And I am not kidding that he said this, and this is right out of Nazi Germany. Steve Bannon today said that more white women have to have more children, and they have to be raised in the Judeo-Christian tradition. This is pure fascism. And we also are aware of the article in the New York Times from Jamie Boole that Bannon is putting basically fascist operatives in every precinct in the United States on these election boards. So the question you raised, saying that the Democratic Party is the only one that can beat this, the question is, what is the Democratic Party going to do? I mean, these calls, we have two focuses. Number one, as you've said, the Voting Rights Act, there are two of them, the John Lewis Act and the Freedom to Vote Act. And we don't know if they're going to cover everything that's needed to cover, but we are working very hard on it. And the second is that if there's going to be a Democratic Party, if we're going to have to rely on a Democratic Party, and I don't see another party coming up between now and 2022, then that Democratic Party has to take the millions of dollars it gets and do grassroots organizing, as we did with the Georgia Way in January of this year. Joel Siegel, I know you've read Kenny's article in great detail and are prepared to discuss a lot of this. I want to compliment you on your shirt. And would you want to talk to Kenny about this great presentation he's just made?
Sure. First of all, Kenny, it's an honor to meet you. You're a handsome dude, man. I just want to tell you that. You are. You're a handsome guy. Look like an actor or something. But I need to thank Kenny. Kenny was responsible for raising the money for GREEP. Without Kenny, there would be no GREEP. Because of Kenny's philanthropy, we were able to hire Mike and Stephen Caruso and me. And as the result of these calls, we now have an entirely new movement, a grassroots movement, to really focus on the Georgia way, and that's getting the grassroots in the African-American community to raise money for them so that they can get the vote out. A Democratic Party does not fund them. That's changing. But also this, you know, Sluggo, you've been incredible, but there's been more connections made on these weekly calls. It's not just voting, it's homelessness, it's healthcare. So thank you, Kenny. I put Kenny's article on my Facebook. It's the first article that I've read that explains what's about to happen. If you look at the voter suppression laws that have been passed across the country, there's nothing to guess. It's fascism and authoritarianism is here. When you had a president who called the Secretary of State of Georgia and said, find me 14,000 votes or else, that's all we need to see. If you see, you know, what Trump is doing now, for example, what's happening in Georgia is they're stacking the local board of elections. The Republican Party in Georgia and the state legislature are literally firing the Democratic Board of Elections folks and a predominantly Fulton County, which is predominantly African-American, and placing their people on there. And as you know, Robert Wilson, the former Undersecretary of State of North Carolina, has told us that what happened in Arizona was just, it was very prescient. It was, you know, what's about to happen in the swing states. I think fascism and authoritarianism is here. If you study what happened in Nazi Germany, what happened under Mussolini, the Germans used to say that Hitler was a funny little man until he burned down the Reichstag. And Mussolini was a funny little man. Well, he was actually a big man. But if we do not sound the alarm and organize the celebrities, dignitaries, especially the African-American wing of the Democratic Party, I wish my former boss, John Conyers, was alive. May he rest in peace. If he was alive right now, he would have already convened hearings on this in the Judiciary Committee. He would have convened weekly meetings. I do think we're going to have to find some champions in the on the House Judiciary Committee, you know, to work on this and to hold official hearings. I don't know of any Judiciary Committee hearings on what's happening in Georgia and other states. That is something that I used to work for the Judiciary Committee. That is something that I would like to work on with everybody on this call. I think that as America becomes blacker and browner and Republicans feel like they're going to lose power on the state level and the federal level, they're going to do whatever they can to steal the election. My brother and I last night were watching the history of the Klan and what the Klan did when they first became the most powerful in the South. They started off as a social club. Then gradually they morphed into a terrorist group. But if you look at what they did, their main strategy was to stop black elected officials from getting into office in the South. I don't see any difference between what the Klan did during Reconstruction and what's happening now. I think that Bannon and a lot of the far right wing want to make as much money as they can, including Rudy Giuliani. When you go far, far to the right, it's a great way to raise money. We have right-wing members of Congress who now are going to fundraisers. And what they're doing is saying, you know, the most racist, you know, anti-Muslim, you know, comments that I've ever heard, and they're raising money for it. So I'm going to give you at least the good news. The good news is that in the first week of November 2022, GREEP is organizing an emergency national town hall meeting with African-American faith leaders, African-American politicians, people from the rainbow, and we're going to sound the alarm. Now, this has never been done before. Kenny, I don't know if you have any plans the first week, of March, but I'd like for you to be one of the presenters. What we're going to do is really lay out, basically, Kenny, everything that you said in your article, and then we're going to have subsequent town hall meetings until we get consensus that we have to do anything. I'll close by saying, I hope that we pass federal legislation to outlaw the Klan, outlaw the white nationalist groups, outlaw the Boogaloos. I don't think that, you know, the Constitution protects domestic terrorism, last time I checked. And then also, Slug and I and Tatanka had a conversation today. We want to organize our own Defend Democracy brigades in the swing states and raise the kind of money that we're going to need to train people to let the right wing know and Bannon know that we have our eyes on them, and we're not going to allow this craziness to happen. Because if we let them go unchecked, I think they're going to win. But anyway, Kenny, thank you so much for that incredible article.
Thank you for that, Joel. Kenny, you want to respond?
No direct response, but I would like to pose to the group, which is so expert in these things. I tried to be a little bit provocative and say that election protection as we know it, that is to say good audits and turning out the vote and Panmark paper ballots, early voting, vote by mail, all the good things that this group has worked for. I tried to be a little provocative by saying those things won't stop the plan. So I'm hoping that somebody on this call in particular would engage a little bit with this. I'm not saying it to be confrontational or criticize the work that this group does, because I think the work is superb. But I also, thinking about it logically, and I'm not an elections lawyer or elections specialist, but just thinking about it logically, I don't see those things stopping the plan. So again, I'd love to be wrong, but even if I'm not, I'd love to hear from the real experts on this call, a little engagement with that point.
One thing, Kenny, I want to point out, I am writing a history of the United States. I did some research last night. I'm writing the finale. It's really hard to write about Donald Trump and stay seated. What we have on our side in this country is the majority of the population. In the 2020 election, 58% of the women who are a majority in the country voted to get rid of Trump. That takes us back to the indigenous matriarchy, where the women alone were sufficient to defeat him. And also voters under 30, the millennials and the Zoomers, gave Trump a 24% drubbing. In other words, the margin among young voters was a 24% over margin for Biden. So we do have the majority of the country on our side. I will say that, you know, the things that we're doing, I think, are essential. If we are going to have elections in this country, nobody, even Trump, is not talking about canceling elections. I'm sure if it came down to it and he's sure he would lose, he would try to do that. Nixon did look into it. But as long as we're going to have elections, one part of the campaign has to be to have elections that are going to work. And that does involve paper ballots, audits, and other things like that. So I'm not, I'll take a little bit of an issue with you on that. What we are seeing is that they are intending not to cancel elections, but to take over the whole apparatus. And if the Democratic Party is what we have, and it appears to be, then we have to change. We have to make the Democratic Party do what needs to be done. And your article raises the questions of what really needs to be done. And we have many, many answers for that. I'm glad you provoked the beast there and got the 800-pound elephant the real question is, if you have an 800-pound elephant in the room, who cleans up the mess? That's what I want to know. You know, if someday your prince will come, you will have to clean up after his horse. So let's call on Lynn Feinerman. Lynn, do you want to jump in with Kenny Bruno?
Yes,
Lynn, by the way, Kenny Lynn has a women's radio show, and she's on PRN. She's one of our regulars and quite brilliant. Go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, sweet, Harvey. Thank you. I'm not an expert, but I did a program in which a group called the National Popular Vote contract was featured. What they compact, sorry, National Popular Vote Compact. Okay, there are a lot of the people who are actually spearheading this are in common cause, just for your information, Kenny. They are very close to having a nationwide compact between states that says we will only vote for president for the person who gets the majority of the popular vote. What I am trying to figure out, because all of the, you know, trying to get the Democratic Party to do the right thing, give me a break. I mean, you know, James Carville is still alive. So what I'm trying to say here is just really simple. Why are we not giving them more support? They have like one or two states more to put in place, and they've got a nationwide compact. So that's all I'm proposing, because I think all of the other ones are walls too tall to scale.
Wow, that's a term I haven't heard. It's a good one. Kenny?
I'm going to add that option, the compact, to the next version of the article, depending on who will, you know, who will publish it. But I want to say one point, and Lynn, thanks for that, because I think it's a great point. A lot of people will, on hearing this, will say, well, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. This is too hard. That's too hard. And I think the message I'm trying, and they're right in a way, but I think the message I'm trying to get out, including with the original title of DEFCON for Democracy, is that, yes, these are extreme steps. They're even provocative steps, but you have to take extreme steps when the threat is extreme. It doesn't feel like the Democratic Party is treating this as an emergency, which seems crazy. And that's what I was alluding to also when I said, well, okay, maybe you like the filibuster. A lot of people on this call probably don't. But let's just assume for the moment that you do like the filibuster because it protects minority rights in some way, or the great Senate tradition, whatever. Even if you like it, you have to get rid of it in order to pass the voting rights bills. That's just the way it is. So which is more important? Similarly, for secretaries of state to keep Trump off the ballot, you know, this is all assuming he runs and everything like that. That would be a ballsy move. And I hope that's okay to say on radio, but that would be a ballsy move.
It would also be an Overian move.
Right. But it's justified under the circumstances. It's legally justified. And some people will argue that they would be obliged to do that. But politically, it would be difficult to do. There'll be death threats. You'll be out on a limb. And the point I'm trying to say is that, okay, yes, these things might be extreme or far-fetched or difficult, but the DEFCON level demands it. And so on the compact, I'm with you all the way. The DEFCON level demands it, and we should go for it.
Well, let me say also on the, you know, I all my life since I was, went to my first demonstration in 1962, we demonstrated to desegregate a roller rink, and people said, oh, you won't win that. And we did win it. And so I will say that in recent history, there has never been an electoral challenge more undoable than electing a Black and a Jewish senator in a special election in Georgia to the U.S. Senate. Completely, I had everybody I mentioned that to tell me it was never going to happen. And it happened. And that's the only reason we have a Democratic control of the U.S. Senate, tenuous though it may be. So we are looking at something that we can't let happen, which is fascism, and all these undoable things have to be done. That's the bottom line. And I think the number one thing we have to do is to turn the Democratic Party, at least get the apparatus, get their money, and do grassroots campaigning, and get these two voting rights bills passed. Those are the two undoable things, or three, that we really have to do. So also undoable, we have 83 people on the call. This is the only call I've ever been on where the numbers grow. And so, Kenny, you're a big attraction. I did want to introduce you to Ray Lutz. Ray Lutz does a lot of the, has pioneered the audits and election recounts in Arizona. Erica, if you can be, Rake, if you can just say hi to Kenny and explain real quick what we need to do with recounts and audits, that would be great.
Well, I want to thank you, Kenny, for I'm glad to meet you. I just want to respond to your, assertions about auditing and the like. I do think that one of the reasons that we're where we are right now is because we have made ground with auditing and making these last elections more secure. For the first time, we've had paper ballots. Georgia didn't have them. Ohio didn't have them. You know, that call from Trump would have gone through and they would have changed the numbers in prior elections. But we just didn't know about it. So I view it as we've already been taken over. And right now we're on the verge of taking it back. And so we got to keep our, I agree that there's all these different ways we've got to work at the same time. And time and again, I've been so frustrated with the Democratic Party like you have. We become like at ease, like, okay, well, everything's in the bag now. We don't have to worry, because it doesn't make sense that we would ever be unseated. But the Republican Party is incredibly good at what they do. And so they will, and, you know, coupled with people like Trump that want to desperately take it back now, they see that they're losing it. So I think that we still have to do these things like auditing and the rest of it to make sure that they don't go in that direction. But it's like squeezing the balloon, you know, where once you're holding it, it comes out a different place. You got to put something over there. So no matter how we hold that thing, they're going to go a different direction. They're going to take over the post office, which I didn't believe that they would actually make that, but they did it anyway, you know. And so we have to put, even though I agree, some of these things may dominate. I hate to use the word Trump, but they will dominate. Like if they do take over the legislatures, then that will make the auditing not do so well. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Ray, thank you very much. Ray's work in Arizona, Kenny, was absolutely essential. I want to apologize, Pete Pekarsky and Steve Rosenfeld. I said we'd get to you at 10 till, but one of the mandates to moderating is when you have a really great discussion going, you keep it going. So if you'll allow me to defer, I want to keep this going with, and Julie also, Julie Levine, this is the kind of discussion you really want to have. So I hope you don't mind we push you back a ways and keep going.
Absolutely not. I appreciate being on the call, and this is a very important conversation.
Julie, you're in Topanga, and we know you're easy to get along with, so we appreciate that. Okay. Kenny, did you want to respond? Now I go to Mary Butler.
Well, no, I want to clarify. Of course, I think that audits and transparent elections and all the things Ray and all of you have been working for are important, and we need to keep going. But there is a dynamic that's a little different, which is that these very radicalized state legislatures can send competing slates to Congress, and I think they will in a way that they didn't last time, or at least I think they plan to. It's going to be hard to, you know, once the suspicion is that, oh, elections aren't fair, fraud is rampant, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people actually believe that. It's just hard to prove that, oh, here's the electoral slate that you should send. And our electoral college system is so weird and it's very vulnerable.
Yes.
So I just think yes to all of that, what Ray said, but there's an additional dynamic that's happening now that goes even beyond what we've been working on.
Well, I got to say, as a historian, I always get eyes to roll. But in Bush v. Gore, the decision that made George W. Bush president, after, you know, there was people forget this. There was a violent mob that assaulted the vote counters in South Florida after the 2000 election. And they stopped the vote count. This is exactly the thing that you would expect from Steve Bannon. This was called the Brooks Brothers mob. They're all well-dressed and they all terrorized the people who were counting the votes. And then the Supreme Court stepped in and stopped the vote count. And the three of the current members of the US Supreme Court, I will not call them justices, Roberts, Amy Comey Barrett, and the other guy whose name always escapes me because he's such a Kavanaugh. Those three people were on the legal team that supported the mob that stopped the vote count violently in South Florida in 2000. And then if you look and read Bush v. Gore, as I have, that decision, there is a paragraph in that decision that everybody should read, which explicitly says that a state legislature can override the popular vote and appoint their own Electoral College delegation, which is exactly what you're talking about, Kenny, and I'll send you the paragraph. It's one of the most terrifying paragraphs that you will ever read, because in 2010, the Koch brothers with Karl Rove won the gerrymandering, took over the legislatures in the Heartland and in the Confederacy. That would be Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and the 11 Confederate states, Ohio. And then, and so they control by gerrymandering the state legislatures, which have been empowered by Bush v. Gore to choose their own Electoral College delegations. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's worse, Kenny, than the way you phrased it, but that's exactly what we're looking at. So, you know, if we want to have anything resembling a democracy, we have to deal with this. Mary Butler, you were cut off last week. I'm so sorry. So go ahead, please, with Kenny Bruno.
Mary, all right. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, Kenny, I've been watching what you're watching and researching it. And this is since Bush, actually since Reagan, because my families are, we're a bunch of nomadic people, and this is the way we think. But anyway, I want to point out, Kenny, that all this is start transpiring in 1885 with the Gridiron Club in Washington, D.C. Then we had the next step into what we're seeing in World War II when they created the Throwaway Society. Then in Reagan time, we had him create the Continuous Government Act, which allows them to police the citizens and put controls on them that we've never seen before. Then Bush created the War on Terror and the Homeland Security Act, which is umbrellaed underneath of the Continuous Government Act. And then Obama, he didn't really do anything, okay, but when he was in office and they allowed the Gay Rights Act to come through, which was wonderful.
Okay, Mary, can you focus on a question, Mary?
One more thing. Attached to that was the ability for the government to arrest us if we stood in defiance of the government on that same bill for the gay rights. If you look at the back end of that, you'll find some mischievous stuff. And then we have what's going on now, which you mentioned, which brings us current. And I feel, Kenny, that you feel that the Democrats and everybody else have become a bunch of Vogons from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxies. But I've suggested that, and I wonder if you would think the same thing. This is the question. I've proposed the only quick save of our nation is for First Nation to buy up all debt that the United States owes everybody in the world. If they bought it up, they could pull rank on the U.S. government from being able to continue with what they're trying to do.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mary. I want to apologize to Pete Pekarsky and Steve Rosenfeld. If you can, we're going to postpone till next week your discussion of Wisconsin. Steve, I know you've been with us. I appreciate it. And Pete, so sorry. But I want to continue with this, and then we'll go to Julie Levine. Mary, thank you for the question. Go ahead, Kenny, and then...
I don't have a response to that. I don't know how to make that happen, or
maybe the foundation could buy up all the debt of the world.
Yeah. Hey, it's hand the country back over to the First Nations, to the tribal nations, but I'm worried about who keeps the nukes.
Yes, absolutely. Mary, thank you for that. I will point out, by the way, we're finally getting recognition. My history book talks about the fact that the indigenous really were the founders, not only in an abstract form, but if you look at the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois Confederacy, That was the wellspring of American democracy. It was the most democratic government in the world, the purest democracy actually that we've ever had, and the tribes were run by women. And that women are now a voting majority. As I say, they went at 58% against Trump. So I think that's the biggest transition of all. And that's what freaks these guys out the most. So,
and Cherokee, the Cherokee as well.
Cherokee and the Iroquois, yes.
Yeah, Reason, we need a wampum belt.
Myla Reason, you've got your hand. Myla Reason.
Oh, thank you so much, Harvey. And very interesting.
Myla's a mainstay of our calls and a great activist. She's been with us for a long, long time. Go ahead, Myla.
Thank you, Harvey. And thank you, Kenny. I wanted to come back to the 14th Amendment and the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And I think that I heard you say that it would be up to the states to enforce the U.S. Constitution. And that's not what I've been following arguments for enforcing that provision in the U.S. Constitution that says that elected officials who have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution, who engage in insurrection or violence against the state, I don't have the exact wording, but it's really pretty clear and simple, will no longer be eligible to hold public office and will be removed from any office that they may hold. And I know that there are members of Congress who've been calling for the enforcement of that that provision of the U.S. Constitution. And I think it may be up to Congress and Merrick Garland. Now, I don't know whether the state, that's new to me. I mean, I'm not an expert on it. So it's interesting that you bring up that it would be up to the states to enforce. But I think that it's really important that we push DOJ and that we push Congress to uphold the Constitution and enforce that provision. So that's it. Thank you.
Kenny?
Well, I really agree with the point about DOJ. That in and of itself wouldn't necessarily change the election, but it would be a huge help if they would take action on all the people who engaged in and abetted January 6th. Removing someone from office, you might be right, I don't know. But as far as preventing someone from running for office who previously held office and violated their oath, I don't see how it's not the Secretary of State, because the ballots are made by the state. So, that just seems like, from a practical point of view, the place where someone can be kept off the ballot.
Well, thank you for that explanation. That makes perfect
sense. Well, let me just point out, again, this is an eye roller. The 14th Amendment was passed after the Civil War and was aimed to protect the Black people in the South, and also to do exactly what you're saying, which is to prevent the former Confederates from going on the ballot. It wasn't just a terrible human tragedy that Lincoln was killed. It was also a political tragedy, because Andrew Johnson came in and he was very pro-slavery, and he just let all these Confederate guys back and take over the government in the South. And he prevented the redistribution of the plantations to the former slaves. So the 14th Amendment, which is the longest of all the amendments, by the way, and it's very complicated. You are right to invoke it. It involves tremendous complexity, the 14th Amendment. But this is why we're so focused on getting these two Voting Rights Acts. And as you recall, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, was meant to enforce the 14th Amendment. And then the Roberts Court in the Shelby decision in 2013 voided all that. And here you have John Roberts sitting on the Supreme Court, who, you know, the Chief Justice, Chief, we don't use justice with him, is voiding all the attempts that you've laid out here to protect our elections. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, let me say one quick thing, which is that Free Speech for People is, as far as I know, the group that's spearheading a campaign on 14.3. And once the campaign is underway, Harvey, I hope you'll have them on one of these calls, because, you know, at some point they're going to actually go for one of the Congress members who participated in January 6th and is up for election in 2022. And they're going to go, you know, they're going to do a public campaign asking the Secretary of State in that member state to do, actually to invoke Section 3. So at that point, they know a lot more about it than I do. And I hope you'll, you know, invite them on and they'll be able to give you much more specifics and also a campaign to join.
Well, if you'll give me their contacts, we will definitely have them on and we'll hope you'll come back on with them.
Right.
Because this is the core of what we're doing. And I'm going to continue with this. We haven't done this before, but there's no reason not to continue with this. I've got six people with their hands up. So if Kenny, if you can stay with us, we sure appreciate it. Thankfully, unlike Tatanka, you're not in your car. So this man, although Tatanka, are you in your car today? I can't tell. The one rule of these calls is you cannot be in a moving call, in a moving automobile. So you're stationary and that's fine. I do remind everybody we're on the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition call. This is our 75th. We have 83 people on the call right now, and we're just going to keep going. I think there's a newcomer, Amaro Lionheart. I want to congratulate you for having the best name of anybody on the call. That's a really very beautiful name. We like that. I'm going to go to someone else with a great name. Well, Marianne Eady, you have joined the call. You are a great founder of the League of Conservation Voters and so much else. So I do want to jump you in here. Glad to see you. I don't know if you know Kenny or not. Marianne and Kenny meet each other. And
I don't know Kenny. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. And we love the forest that you're in.
Yeah. So go
ahead, Marianne, go ahead. Julia, as you can tell, we're delaying your, if we don't do your 5G conversation today, I hope we can do it next week. Is that all right with you?
I can certainly do it next week. Sarah, would you be able to join me if we did it next Monday?
Unless I have a work conflict.
Okay.
Well, that's a backup plan. I mean, I honestly, Kenny is married to my childhood friend, and I'm really delighted to hear what he has to say and all of the comments. So
okay.
I know that's the main priority here, but this is a very important and timely issue, and I'm hoping that people don't just dismiss us. We have a lot of science behind this.
Well, we'll get you.
If I could put the links in the, excuse me, in the chat box.
Yes, put your 5G links in the chat box. That would be great.
It's actually the ocean, the whales, the whale issue, and how the new underwater of Internet Things, which relies on sonar, is threatening whales, marine life, and dolphins, and also can prevent the whales, which mitigate climate change. It's very, very serious and so time sensitive, because we have a December 21st event, that I am going to put this in link and ask if people could outreach to all their organizations, because this will undo every single climate change initiative. It's serious.
We will deal with this next week, absolutely.
Thank you.
And we have talked a bit about 5G before, but we will do it in greater detail next week, okay? Thank you, Julie, for your patience. Thanks
again. You're very welcome. There are major updates. We look forward to talking about them next week.
Okay, put everything in the chat, and we will be prepared for your presentation next week on 5G.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we need.